Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Quickly back in as to break it. Looks it from there. Strong to the goal. He scores! Dylan Strong. That's triggered by Corey Crawford, who made a 120-foot pass. And the Hawks off to the races. Strong catches. It's 3-2.
Middays on the Score.
Bernstein and McKnight in for the Lawrence Holmes Show. The hour brought to you by Builder Supply Outlet on Cermak Road in Broadview. The top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Northwestern Football at Ryan Field this fall. The Wildcats, led by Big Ten Coach of the Year Pat Fitzgerald, host Ohio State, Iowa, Purdue, and Minnesota in Big Ten play. Single game tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team on sale now at NUSports.com. Let's have a conversation about the Blackhawks with a guy who is on Twitter at Stromer, a hockey nickname.
That's how you do it.
Stromer19. Dylan Strome, the Blackhawks center, is on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Over 500 new and used vehicles to choose from at Alpamonte Ford. Dylan, how are you, man?
Pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Wonderful. So, highlight of the trip overseas to Prague. I know you guys would like to come out with a W for sure, but highlight of the trip for you was what, Dylan?
Probably going to that soccer game we went to. We went to a game in Prague. It was Dortmund versus Prague in the Champions League for UEFA, so that was pretty cool. Saw the crowd chanting pretty much the entire game. Didn't really know what they were saying, but it was a wild crowd. I think 30,000 people there, and I guess it was their first Champions League game, so that was it was pretty cool to see.
That wasn't my highlight. My highlight was you and DeBrincat in that tent, sitting at the table, and they've got this blue tarp, and there's this huge unveiling, and there's some guy screaming in German, and they're trying to get you guys unveiled, and the thing is stuck, and then eventually it's there, and you guys looking like, okay, all right, here we are. That happened. All right, German screaming guy, thank you. That was fun.
Yeah, it was pretty awkward. He couldn't get the thing undone, and then everyone was clapping, and then by the time he got it undone, no one was clapping, and then we got our faces shown, so it was pretty awkward.
Yeah, was that just an autograph signing, or just people kind of saying hi? What was that?
Yeah, like, there was a bunch of people in line, and then we signed whatever they had for us, and then we did, shooting on a board, and then we did some stick handling, and then all these people watched us, so it was pretty good. There was actually quite a bit of people there, but it was just an awkward moment that I guess made for some comedy on Twitter.
All right, so here's my question. We had a nice conversation with Stan Bowman over the summer, and just talking about what the Colleton system is going to look like when things really get going a little bit. And one thing he said was, you know, looking at a lot of the numbers and just the eye test, that last year's team was a really good, like, fast-breaking team. You guys up the ice and you know, pretty goals and athletic stuff. Hawks are really good at that. Not so much just setting up in the zone 5-on-5, creating opportunities. How much emphasis has there been on what you guys just do in normal 5-on-5 zone possession time and making sure that that's as productive as the end-to-end stuff?
Yeah, I think, anytime you play against, you know, any team in the NHL, they're going to be pretty good structurally. We actually talked about it yesterday at practice, where majority of everyone's chances in hockey come off of turnover, and that's usually off the rush. So you know, it's definitely tough to create chances 5-on-5. But I think what we've been talking about is, you know, setting the next line up in a good position. So, you know, have a good shift in the offensive zone, and maybe create a whistle, and, you know, let the first line get out there, and or maybe there's an icing call and the first line can get out against, you know, a tired third or fourth line and try to take advantage. So I think just, you know, kind of having a good shift, a good momentum swing, and letting you know, letting the guys that put the puck in the net go out there and you know, hopefully put it in for us.
Talking with Dylan Strome of the Blackhawks here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. You're listening to WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago, Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station. Dylan, I'm looking at a stat line here that says, prior to your trade to the Blackhawks, you had 16 points in the NHL, then went on to put up 17 goals, 34 assists, 51 points total in just 58 games. In every sport, guys like us ask athletes whether there's like a switch that goes on or just something that lights up or a moment where you realize, like, oh, this is how the game works. Did that happen for you? In what ways did you find the big changes happening when you got dealt?
I think a lot of things changed. I don't know. I guess I just kind of came into Chicago. I don't think anyone really knew what to expect of me. I didn't even know what to expect of myself. I mean, obviously I knew I could get points and score and stuff. I did it my whole life. And then all of a sudden in Arizona, I just couldn't really get it done. And, you know, it was kind of frustrating because I had never had to go through that before. So when I got here, I just kind of just tried to reset my whole brain and my whole mindset, and got back to playing with Alex and playing with some really good players, and got out on the ice and just kind of stopped thinking about it so much. I think there was just no pressure on me. Just, you know, go have fun and go play and do whatever you do. And the rest will take care of itself. And I feel like when I was in Arizona, I was always, you know, trying to live up to that third overall pick and trying to, you know, maybe be something I'm not, where, you know, I'm not the most flashy guy out there. I just try to get the job done and try to create some plays for my teammates. And, you know, I guess I was trying to be like just trying to do too much. And I think it kind of hurt me in the long run. And then now I'm here. So now I'm just trying to, you know, not be the most flashy guy, but, you know, have fun and set up my teammates and score some goals and help the team win. I think, you know, we got on some pretty good streaks last year, so hopefully we can do that again this year and get the first win on Thursday.
Not that you had some awful moments in this season with the Blackhawks, but when you find yourself like getting into a rut, like not playing well, are there things that remind you of that trying to do too much, of that kind of mindset or that play style or whatever? And do you find yourself able to get out of it easier because it's identifiable, because you'd been there before?
Yeah, for sure. I think the biggest thing is, for a hockey player, you got to be worried about your game when you're not getting chances. You know, sometimes you go on a little slump, or you go on, you know, don't score for four or five games, but, you know, sometimes most of the time you're getting chances. And I think, you know, when you're getting chances, they're eventually going to go in. So I think as a hockey player, you start to get worried when you're not creating anything. And then that's when you got to kind of reset and figure things out. I think when players go through a slump, you know, a lot of the time they're still getting chances. So it's just about bearing down and putting them in. So I think obviously you don't want to go back to, you know, having no confidence, but you just got to find a way to put them in. You're going to get chances. And sometimes all it takes is, you know, a puck that you just kind of chip out of your zone and someone goes and scores and you get an assist and the team starts winning and you just kind of get on that roll again. So all it takes is something that little to kind of switch your whole game around. So I feel like that's a big thing for hockey players.
The home opener Thursday, 7:30 versus San Jose. They're going to do the red carpet thing again. So the atrium doors are going to open at 3. All United Center parking lots are going to open at 2. And the gates are going to open for the home opener following the conclusion of the red carpet event right around 5:30 p.m. Now, your guy DeBrincat also is one of these guys who just all of a sudden just seemed like he realized he could be really good. And it impresses me to see how easily he's able to slip into high danger areas and hold his position there despite being the size he is, be able to make plays on the puck in traffic around so many bigger guys. Is that something that we've watched him learn, or is that an innate ability that just some guys are better at that?
I think he's just better at a lot of guys about finding open areas. Like you said, he gets open when you don't think he can get open, and somehow he just, you know, he has the puck on his stick. I mean, you know, usually he's waiting up there with the stick in the air and in the slot and looking for a pass, and that's where you got to be to score the goals. So he knows where to go to score the goals, and you know, he's got some good players setting him up, you know, all over the ice. He's got, you know, we got some really good defensemen that move the puck up, and obviously anytime you're on the ice with Kane, you got to be ready for the puck. So, you know, he knows how to get open, and I think it's a good trait for him to have, where you know, guys want to play with him because he can score so easily. And I think that's definitely, like I said, a good trait to have.
You have a reputation as a bit of a stat head, and that it's not really all that common in hockey to have guys looking up numbers. Do you do it just because you're a fan and you're just interested in stuff and you happen to be looking at it anyway? Or is that sort of a way you can look to learn more about your individual game? I don't know if you're looking at the, you know, Corsi 5-on-5 stuff, Fenwick stuff, whatever, some of the modern analytics that are available and regressed PDOs and all that kind of thing. But is that professional stuff, or is that fan stuff, or both?
I'm not really looking at the Corsi and things like that. I mostly just look at, you know, stats of guys that we're playing against, or guys who, you know, are on our team, or like, I don't know, former stats or anything. I guess I just get bored sometimes, and after games you're kind of, you know, wired up, and you don't hard to go to bed after a game right away. So I'm just usually hanging out on my phone or my iPad and just, you know, watching highlights. And then if I see a guy, I just kind of look him up or whatever, and I don't know. I guess it just kind of stays with me. And then when people talk about it, I'm not afraid to jump in and say what I know. So I guess that's why I'm considered kind of that way. But I guess I've just always been like that. I like to watch hockey. I like to look things up. So mostly just goals, assists, and you know where people played. And I like to get relationships with guys on different levels. And you know I like to know where they played before or where they played junior or college or anything like that. So I don't know. Just look up guys on hockey database or Elite Prospects or whatever the website is, and then just go from there.
Do you have like a favorite quirky NHL stat that sticks in your mind, or like a conversation starter? Like, for instance, I'm more of a baseball guy myself, and like the thing that sticks in my brain, baseball stat wise, is Stan Musial had the same amount of hits on the road as he did at home over like a 20-year career. It's mind blowing me. Do you have a favorite weird quirky stat?
Not really. The guy I think of when I think of that is Chris Kunitz. He I think he has. There's a stat that he has more games played than some crazy number in his draft class, which he was never drafted. So the year that he got drafted, I think he was playing midget, and he never got drafted. And he has more games played than I want to say like 95% of his draft class. So which is pretty crazy. So for someone that hasn't got drafted, I got to know him pretty well last year. With my seat partner on the plane, and we played guard, so got to talk to him. He went to Ferris State, which not too many players in the NHL have gone there, so I guess that's kind of what I got.
It's a good stat.
Talking with Blackhawks center Dylan Strome on the Bernstein and McKnight Show, extended into the Lawrence Holmes Show hours here today on The Score. What has it been like with so many steady veterans that were added to this roster, guys like Olli Maatta and Calvin DeHaan and Andrew Shaw? What does it do to a locker room? What does it do for the younger players to have that much experience around up and down the roster?
Yeah, it's nice to see. I mean, I think when you look at our roster on paper, it definitely got better compared to last year. I think Stan did a really good job this summer of adding the pieces, I think, to make us, hopefully get over that hump. I mean, last year we only missed the playoffs by, I think, it was 6 points, and we were right into it till the third last game of the year. So, obviously, you look at that, and you look at, a few games that hopefully could have gone our way, and we'll go this way this year. So, obviously, it's a new year, and everyone's kind of at the same level right now, but I think it's exciting to see. I mean, it kind of sucks that, I think we're the only team in the NHL that's played one game. So, we're looking forward to Thursday and hopefully getting to stay on the right track. And sucks playing a game and losing and having to wait so long, but hopefully we can use it to our advantage. And then we play a bunch in a row here. So, we're looking forward to that.
So, Dylan, I'm guessing that between you and your teammates, there is one, if not many, group texts going on.
Yeah, there is.
So I'm wondering on the Blackhawks group texts, the one that just includes the players, the one that doesn't have any coaches or assistants or trainers or equipment guys looped in, on the players group text, what was the most common response when you found out that the Hawks had gone out and gotten Robin Leonard to go with Corey Crawford?
Well, actually you don't really keep in touch like in the group chat over the summer. So that was during the summer, I believe. I think that was in July, early July. That might have been July 1st. So, not much. I think I was in Chicago actually during the summer for training, and a bunch of guys here were really pumped. And obviously Leonard had such a great year last year, and I don't think we really knew much about him. But now that I got to know him and how good of a guy he is, and he's awesome. He's an awesome guy to have in the locker room. He's definitely a loud human being, and he definitely lets you know when you don't score on him in practice. So he's always there to hold you accountable, and he wants you to be the best player. So he's fun to be around, and he's an awesome guy with a great story. And we're happy to have him on our team.
I mentioned Andrew Shaw before. One thing you know about having him around is that he tends to get ugly, greasy goals, and they go in off of the skates and people and things chin and pads. Backs of goaltenders and chin pads, and it's fine. And I'd love to see more of it because, back to the first question I asked about how you guys would fast break into some beautiful tic-tac-toe passing goals. I wonder how much emphasis there is on the old hockey aphorism of put puck on net, sometimes puck go in net. And it doesn't always have to be the 100% probability or the 98% probability that sometimes just the force of your line of just being aggressive and just giving yourself chances, maybe you get a rebound and you just throw one in off of a skate.
I think you're exactly right. Hockey is about getting greasy goals, and I think that's what Shaw brings, is gets to the net hard, and a lot of pucks go in off him, and you know, he creates havoc. I don't know if you guys watched the first game, but he was in there just absolute causing mayhem in their zone. You know, even late in the game, he was running around. The puck went off him. He screened on the Kane goal. He was screening the goalie unbelievably. So I think it's things like that where if you have the more traffic you have in front, the greasier goals you get, and every team needs those, because like you said, you know, there's not too many, you know, pretty passing plays where it's tic-tac-tic-tac-toe and in. And I think we have to do a better job of that, of getting in front and creating those goals, because it's just going to help the team in the long run.
Dill, this is a lot of fun. We'll leave you with this bit of statistical trivia if it interests you. The great Wayne Gretzky has more assists than anyone else has points.
Yeah, I knew that.
Okay. All right. We're going to have to play Stump Stromer next time. So, Jay, next time we have him on, you got to up your game. He knew that one. Dylan, thank you. It was fun.
Thanks, Dylan.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Dylan Strome of the Blackhawks.
Whoa, did you hear that bus? He just backed that over, Jay.
Yeah, because I'm here looking up obscure hockey facts.
That's not obscure.
Everyone has that one. Everyone has that one in your brain.
You were asking about favorites, and that's my favorite.
That's true. That is our favorite.
People don't understand the greatness of Wayne Gretzky. You have to tell them.
Rick, we will need to clip and save the... Yeah. I knew that. Dylan Strome.
Who is the baseball player that hits 247 every year?
Chris Davis, right? Chris Davis with a K.
Yes, every year hits 247.
I don't think he did it this year. I'd have to look up. We got Joe Sheen coming up in just a little bit. We can do that then. We can talk Chris Davis and batting 247 each year of your cursed major league career.
Oh, we'll talk a lot of stuff. But if you're just joining us, the sports story, the most important sports story of the day, is the fact the Chinese government has said it's reconsidering its entire business relationship with the National Basketball Association.
It's a $4 billion problem.
Because of a tweet. And there's a bit of hypocrisy going on in that, too. When they start talking about what is free speech and what is their affairs, and I'm going to get to it. We have an email that speaks to the inherent hypocrisy of the rabbit ears of some of these communist regimes.
We'll get to the big news of the day when we come back. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Two white guys doing Lawrence Holmes' show.
Today and Friday, that is indeed the case, with Bernstein and McKnight with you, an extended version. We've got all sorts of remixes of our hits that we have. We should do like a second remixed Midday Midway later on in the show.
Or maybe I've got stuff.
I'm open to a Friday Fung.
What was the Friday Fung we were going to do? We were talking about it. We had an idea.
I am open to one.
I'm not here Friday, so you do whatever you damn well please.
Yeah, he ain't doing the open for it.
There was something we talked about with a Friday Fung. It was like last, if anybody remembers, it was like last week in a midday segment
or something.
Did
we have something?
Yeah, there was some like inkling of an idea. A Friday Fung.
A textural remember.
It was ready to take off. It was close. We were close on an idea for a Friday Fung. And I
want to grab a couple phone calls here if we can. But first, I want to read this from the always thoughtful Glenn.
Yeah, go ahead.
And Glenn downtown says, for what it's worth, I was listening to the BBC about this earlier today. Their take on the situation with the NBA in China was that Adam Silver, in his second attempt at dealing with this, was actually standing up for the free speech rights of the NBA's constituent members. The part of this that is really galling from an international standpoint is that China regularly plays the Western imperialism foreign interference card when other governments criticize its internal policies. But if the Chinese government seeks to curtail what citizens of another country say about Chinese affairs in their own country, that's meddling in the internal affairs of another nation, too.
Okay.
Keep in mind, you can't get Twitter in China. Because China has its own heavily censored social media platforms precisely to prevent this sort of thing from happening. The only way the average Chinese citizens know about this is because someone in the Chinese government is going out of their way to monitor what people in the NBA community are saying. That is the height of hypocrisy.
Interesting.
That's the kind of thing we used to end with, Chinese government, who you crapping?
Ah, that's right. Yeah. That would have been a good who you crapping.
It's a good point that the rabbit ears here of this particular regime are trying to find things that are said about it in a foreign country by someone else in there who has those rights in that country.
Yes. I mean, that's how economic warfare works. You know, that's kind of it's retaliation probably for something that's going on within economics. That's the playbook for Big C communism. Listen to everything everywhere. Nothing goes untouched. Nothing goes unturned.
But ultimately, the passion for basketball might override everything. Let's say even play it out. Even if they cut all ties with the NBA, you can't get jerseys. You can't get the shoes. You can't sell anything there. Nothing's on TV.
Yeah.
You don't think that a billion people are still going to get the find some way to see what they want and buy what they want and wear what they want?
What will the retribution be?
What, are they going to shoot them? I guess they could.
I think that's a fair question, isn't it? I mean, listen, probably not that, but that's a government that's gone to extreme lengths about a lot of things, some of them more meaningless than basketball, isn't it?
Look who's out today. Frank in Oak Park is on the score. Hello, Frank.
Hi, guys. It's not too often I get to discuss international politics on a sports radio station, but this whole thing with the Chinese government is something I follow as kind of a hobby. Just to give some background on what's happening now, the opinion of leaders in government and business in the U.S. for decades, probably 30, 40 years, was you could eventually wear down the authoritarian nature of the Chinese society through a combination of commerce and tourism. The problem that you've got now is the leader, Xi Jinping, who's taken over there, is kind of a throwback to kind of the Mao era in a lot of ways. He's used an anti-corruption campaign, anti-corruption in quotes, the last 3 or 4 years to basically eliminate any opposing voices he had in the party, elected by the party from a group. Now he's eliminated any terms, year terms on that thing. So he is effectively the premier for life. He's going to lose that job when he dies, and then he'll probably hand it over to one of his kids. So they're doing a lot of things in terms of the surveillance state that wasn't done before. That's very scary. You talk to people who've like adopted children from China and maybe have revisited China, you know, to give the kids like a taste of their roots maybe 10 years ago, and maybe have revisited in the last like 3 or 4 years. I've got two groups of friends who've done that, and the oppression on the visitors is palatable. And it's very interesting. He's doing other Mao-like things. You know, Mao used to have his book of quotations that was like the effective Bible for the nation in the Cultural Revolution. Xi Jinping's got that now. If you looked at any of the videos of the celebration of the 70th anniversary of the creation of the communist state, which was actually a very good, well-run video for a live event, they spent probably several million dollars getting that done. But the people on the podium, on the dais, the leaders, it was guys in military uniforms. It was guys in business suits. But the dude in the open limousine running up and down Tiananmen Square, you know, giving the go-to-it sign to the forces, was Xi Jinping in an open limousine, and he's the only guy in a Mao suit. So they're moving from an authoritarian model to a totalitarian model. And this kind of conflict, you know, I think we'll look at it in like 5 years and saying this is maybe like the opening volley in like a number of increasing things like this. Because when nations go from authoritarian to totalitarian, they stop making life hell for their own citizens and they start making it hell for everybody else.
Yeah, I wonder, didn't we start, how much of this traces back to what we showed and the message we sent with the Beijing Olympics and everybody publicly kowtowing and celebrating and pouring the money in? And when that gets going, I just wonder how that empowers, like, okay, we've got this now, we can do what we want.
Well, I mean, anything, you know, Mao may have wanted to do some of the things that Xi Jinping is doing now, but it was a relatively poor country you're talking about 40 years ago. What they're doing as far as integration of surveillance of social media in that country and, like, you know, surveillance systems is really frightening. It's like 1984-ish. Mm-hmm. It's controlling, trying to control every aspect of citizens' behavior. So I see what this guy's doing, and I think it's only a matter of time before you're seeing like little hints of this and what he's doing in the South China Sea, but it's only a matter of time, I think, before he starts to do military moves on his neighbors, and I think it's only a matter of time before he sends the army in to do some brutal stuff in Hong Kong.
Wow, because this
lady who's running things is kind of an inefficient tool for him. You know, she's sort of like just sort of a puppet, and she's not really that effective. And I think that's going to ratchet up the whole situation because nobody's going to be able to soft soap what this guy's up to when he really comes down on those citizens. And the whole thing that tripped this off was when Britain handed over Hong Kong to China 20 years ago, they were supposed to maintain a system that maintained, like, the British established rights for the Hong Kong citizens. They've been gradually, like, eroding that. Like, they would secretly kidnap people who were, voices against the regime there, and then they would come back, like, scared as crap.
Yeah, well,
and not seeing anything.
And these current protests were largely because of what was an otherwise like mundane travel restriction.
Yep.
And they noticed this. It was sort of in the middle of the slippery slope where everybody just started realizing that they had to do something. You know, appreciate it, Frank, but we're up against it time wise here. And all the texters are saying that is the longest question to Hub that he has ever asked, and good luck answering that one.
Hub had to leave.
Yeah. The bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join Northwestern Basketball, the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Home opponents include Michigan State, Michigan, and Illinois. Season tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at nusports.com. Fresh Mike Leach sound.
It's going to be glorious. It's going to be full of those. Rick Camp, our producer, has returned from the stills. He has mashed the grapes of Mike Leach sound with his bare feet. They are ready to be consumed by you, the listener. Mike Leach,
mashed
all of his glory, going up in just a bit. Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
That role that he has used to be sort of...
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
You know, wouldn't necessarily...
There are a few things better than when Mike Leach not only just talks about stuff, but the way that he snuffles and sneezes
snorts
and CPAPs himself. It's almost it's like a combination of an oracle and a zoo animal. And whatever it is, we love it. This segment brought to you by Ameristar Casino East, the new sports book at Ameristar East Chicago is open. It is located just inside the entrance to the casino.
Good place for it.
With 12 betting kiosks, you can make bets without waiting. While you're there, sign up for the My Choice loyalty program. When you show your betting slip, you will receive $10 toward a stadium or table game bet. I have not heard this.
Neither have I.
Okay. Now, Rick, what do we need to know? How do we just say, here's Mike Leach?
Yeah, pretty much. They say, I like the format. I think it's fair to point out the format of his pressers because they bank on this now.
Oh, absolutely they do.
It's in-room reporters get to ask real football questions. The people on the phone who have real football questions, second round in the room, and then they let this guy ask stuff like this.
Back in August, I think it was, when you tweeted about how you liked cats as a pet and didn't know why people would dislike cats. The question for you this week is, how would you describe cat owners, cat people, and dog people? What's the difference?
There's a definite difference. I've never been able to understand animosity towards a cat any more than like a squirrel or a hamster or something, you know? You know, you don't see somebody, I hate hamsters, or I hate squirrels, or I hate robins, you know. I mean, but there is definitely some people that hate cats, which strikes me as quite strange, because in the end, it's only a cat. And that someone would allow a cat to disturb them that much and generate so much emotional anxiety. I have a hard time understanding that. I do think there's a point to where dog owners are evolving towards cat owners, and I think that's unfortunate. cat owners tend to be, from my experience, more independent, a little more solo, and I guess appreciate the independence in a cat. Cat owners can become obsessive where at a higher rate than dog owners, where instead of, you know, one cat's fun, two cats are twice as fun, so let's get 20 of them, you know? And the other things, cats can destroy things at a rate that, although it may not rival a dog, it can come close. The other thing, I will say this, when they crap in your yard, they smell a little different, cats from dogs, I find. dog owners tend to be a little more frolicky, you know, oftentimes a little more family-oriented. in other words, it's almost like they get a dog to get the kids off their back a little bit and give them something to mess with. Now, I do think this, though. Those that have those purse dogs that carry them around in a purse and, you know, those little, like, the type of dog, the type of dog that it's pretty tough to distinguish whether it's a dog or a guinea pig, those people that have those type of dogs are kind of morphing into cat owners. You know, they want something little and cute that they can carry around. And it's very, 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 very difficult for me. You know, once a dog is, say, below 10 pounds, to call it a dog. I mean, it may technically be on the scientific scale a dog, but it's really not a dog in the emotional and mental sense. You know, I mean, that's something different. And, you know, without going into too many of the personality traits of folks that like those sort of dogs, and to save myself from getting in a lot of trouble, suffice it to say, I would recommend that those people get a cat instead.
How would you describe raccoon owners?
Not very many of them. minority. So if we're going to go down that path of... you know, if the more distinctive a minority you are and all the rights and privileges that go along with it, I think raccoon owners should get the most because I don't know hardly any. Fantastic pet, kind of a temporary relationship. You only get a couple years with a raccoon before they get independent and they're ready to do their own thing.
Famously, sure.
Fantastic. One of the greatest experiences of my childhood was having a raccoon.
They grew up so fast.
So you owned a raccoon?
Yes.
What age?
Let me think about that. That's okay. So why we're already out there. I'm going to say ninth, 10th grade. Yeah.
And then you let it go after a certain amount of time?
Well, you know, it's just part of the course with them. they hit that kind of, I guess, whatever in raccoon years is 18 or something. And, you know, they're not really fierce, but they just get kind of snappy, and you can tell that they're, you know, kind of independent and that the – you know, the time has passed, and
they want to take your face off.
almost like kids as they get into adulthood. You know, they start to get into adulthood.
Like a murderous child.
The raccoon gets sort of rebellious, sort of independent, and if he bites on you, he's not always playing. He's biting a little harder. You know, and then. When we let him go, you know, it was kind of like everybody knew the deal. You know, went out in the country, opened the gate of the pickup, and he just kind of looked around, trotted out of the pickup, looked around some more, and just left, you know, and left. And it was, you know, there was almost a weird mental telepathy. Well, it's been fun. It's over now. But you got to understand, at our place, I mean, we lived out in the country. The raccoon wasn't really locked up there either. You know, I mean, he had kind of a cage, and you know, to, if anything, to keep him protected at night from something that might come through. But and it was kind of a big square deal. But you know, he wasn't particularly locked up even at our place. You know, but until he left the property, wasn't just terribly inclined to leave. But yeah, it was just kind of time. And they say, and from others that I've talked to, that's the way it goes with raccoons. You know, once you hit that that stage in their life, they're ready to, instead of be pet raccoons, they're ready to be full-fledged raccoons, you know.
What was your raccoon's name?
Bilbo Baggins. Yep.
Yeah, of course.
Some other guy had found it. This wasn't unheard of. It was one common, but it wasn't unheard of. Somebody, farmer or something, had, you know, found a nest of raccoons, and I don't know if the mother got killed or something, but then, he had them, and he lived in town, so we got the raccoon from him, and it was a little easier for us, you know, we were out of town, and the raccoon, you know, you go out there in the yard, and raccoon dogs and cats are playing, you know, so.
And your family was okay with you bringing it home?
You had to get mom to agree to it. Yeah. But, we worked on her a little. Didn't take too long because, like I say, we lived out in the country, so it really wasn't that big of an inconvenience. Yeah.
Would you say owning wild animals kind of shaped who you are today a little bit?
That's difficult to say. That'd be a lot of shape, evaluation. I don't know that it did. I mean, that's the only wild animal I had. We used to catch mice, but we didn't keep them or, like, semi-domesticate them at all. My brother would catch snakes. I'd give him run and start with the BB gun. I wasn't big into snakes. That's about it for wild stuff. Other than, he was into catching everything from grasshoppers to crickets or whatever. But that's the about entire as far spectrum. As that one.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Mike Leach, the head coach of the Washington State Cougars football team.
Oh my God, that's just glorious. Glorious
he
stuff.
He owned a raccoon, semi-owned a raccoon, I guess.
Well, it wasn't like a timeshare with a raccoon.
No, he owned it, but it just wasn't really all that enclosed. It just chose to stay there. It could have run away at any time.
No, but, not so much. It was more like a dog family that has a big backyard with the electric fence. You just kind of let it's there and it's out there and it comes in at night sort of thing. But whatever it is during the day, that's its own business.
Bilbo Baggins the raccoon.
That is amazing.
That's all you need, isn't it?
That's a college football coach. Like so many college football coaches, just the same guy.
Right.
Just the same human being.
Just the same sort
that of... That one's not.
Obtuse, chud, authoritarian.
That one's
he isn't.
Not.
No.
That is amazing. No,
he's got a law degree, he's got life experiences, and he's obsessed with pirates.
I've never been able to understand animosity towards a cat any more than like a squirrel or a hamster or something.
That is a general statement of observation. But yeah, squirrels and hamsters don't slaughter things for fun.
Do we know that?
They don't slaughter things for fun.
Okay.
Squirrels?
Well, I mean, roving groups of squirrels have been known to, you know, take out a, you know, like the crazy squirrel groups. That happens every day.
What?
You gotta watch out for them.
What are you talking about?
You're telling me that if you're walking down the street, right? And you come across a group of, I don't know, say 15, 20, 30 squirrels. You're like, oh, no problem. They've never been known to hurt people before. You just walk right through that group
of squirrels? I didn't even say people. And second of all, no.
I'm just wondering about your approach to a whole cadre of squirrels.
Cats slaughter things for fun. Squirrels do not.
Yeah.
Squirrels are...
Yeah, it's only a cat. And...
He's right about the purse dogs, though.
Oh, no, yeah.
Absolutely 100% right.
And purse dog people.
He, Mike Leach has declared that any dog under 10 pounds is hereby now a cat.
Not a dog.
There's a lot of those people in my building because our building only allows dogs that are 20 pounds or lighter. So it kind of pigeonholes that market.
Yeah, but it's not a dog.
What if you buy a dog that's under 20 pounds and then it gets fat? Do they take it?
You got to put it on the treadmill. You got
to
go down.
There was someone that I thought they said had like a Siberian husky they were trying to sneak around. And I'm like, come on, man. That's like 20 pounds a leg.
Right? I mean, that's, I just wondered, like, how do they police that? Do they have like a weigh-in?
Oh, God.
Your dog is too fat.
This is not my dog.
Your papers are not in order and your dog is too fat. And so are you. And so is your wife. You must leave the premises immediately.
That is just glorious, and I love Mike Leach so much.
Oh, those press conferences, the fact that that's become a thing and that he does it.
He knows it, too. He
knows it and leans into it. Yep. And I don't know if they give him stuff ahead of time so he can do... He owned a raccoon named Bilbo Baggins, and it just, you know, and of course, everybody knows, and all the raccoon owners out there, you know, after 2 years, it's time for Raccoon Rumspringa. And members of Raccoon Rumspringa. Good God, man. The top of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Northwestern Football at Ryan Field this fall when the Wildcats, led by Big Ten Coach of the Year Pat Fitzgerald, host Ohio State, Iowa, Purdue, and Minnesota in Big Ten play. Single game tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at nusports.com. I love the bye week. Nice to,
of course. Yeah,
stretch those
legs a little bit. A
little bit. Let it spread out. We got Joe Sheehan coming up at 1:20. Going to talk about some playoff baseball, some trends that we're seeing, and all these managerial openings. I mean, there's a lot going on. Now, there's a lot between the old managers and the young managers and what teams want. David Sampson was on earlier today on with Mully and Haw, and I thought he did a great job describing Joe Girardi. Love him or hate him. And I know he didn't get along with Girardi.
No, not so much.
Girardi had nothing nice to say about David Sampson.
The list of people David Sampson's gotten along with is kind of short to begin with. Though,
even though he's got a little Doug Gottlieb in him. In that he,
how do you mean?
I just mean that there's a lot of people that don't like him or for whatever reason. But then you hear him on the radio and you hear him talk about stuff, and you may not agree with him, but he sounds good doing it.
It just feels like he's just ready to get out of whatever conversation he's in, the best shape he can be.
Yes, I mean, it was a little oily, but he's good at it.
Yeah, well, I mean, Sampson, not Gottlieb. I don't know Gottlieb from anybody, but Sampson, that's kind of how it felt to me.
And talking about the big story of the day, too, with the Chinese government threatening to end its relationship with the NBA, which is huge
big
news,
business.
Considering that the founder of Alibaba is the owner of the Nets.
That's a small problem. That's a lot of money. It's Bernstein and McKnight with Joe Sheehan on the way at 1:20 here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.